It's Halloween. Is the mic on? It's episode 64. This is 64. It's Halloween. I'm already anxious about if people are going to show up at my house to trick or treat. You know, I take it personally. If the kids don't show up, then I feel like I failed as a homeowner. Like if I look out and I see they're going to other houses, it just means my house isn't very welcoming. And then I'm anxious. I have other things I have to do today, but I'm like, I got to get back. I got to prepare. And I never get trick-or-treaters. It was one of the things I look forward to when my whole life was getting my own home and having, you know, kids show up for Halloween. So once again, you know, my fantasies don't come true. Episode 64. Oh, let me play this clip. This is me sitting in front of the TV watching the ID channel, another murder show.
There's something on the ID channel called Till Death Do Us Part. You got to hear this analogy. Till Death Do Us Part.
We're in Southeast Oklahoma, which is kind of the Bible Belt. And there's more people that go to church in our town than not. And for somebody to be basically anti-Christ, she stood out to everybody.
Big no-no.
You have people that go to church, and they think just sitting in the church makes them a Christian. I feel that if I go sit in the garage, that doesn't make me a car.
It's a good point.
What they right? thought was Hope was a bad person because she was different. But she wasn't a bad person. She
was a car?
Was Lois a sweetheart.
Was Hope a car? Did she sit in the garage? If I sit in a microwave, does that make me a baked potato? We can do these all day. If I sit, where else could I? If I sit in a basketball arena, does that make me a basketball player? I thought this was so like quaint. So I'm like, listen to this woman. She's just riffing, and she comes up with this crazy analogy. If I sit in a garage, it doesn't make me a car. I thought this is the genius of simplicity. This is the genius of what I call off the grid. The people who aren't part of the big city world like me. Big city Arnie lives in Los Angeles. Big city Arnie grew up in Boston. Big city Arnie went to school in Atlanta, which was country for me. Big city Arnie. Although it looks like big city Arnie is in a trailer right now. And I think it's funny that people actually think I live in this. And you can think what you want. I don't care. But big city Arnie, this is Big Yellow. This is my podcast studio. It's a fully functional bathroom, everything. It's got sinks and what is that? A stove, refrigerator, a fire extinguisher. Because, you know, a lot of times people that, you know, own trailers are close to like NASCAR events and NASCAR cars go up in flames. And so you got the fire extinguisher for the, you know, if that ever happens. But I thought this was so quaint.
I feel that if I go sit in the garage, that doesn't make me a car.
Yeah, by the way, she says, when I feel. So this morning, once again, the internet ruins everything. The internet is going to ruin. I'm going to read lyrics to a song that I think was written in the 60s about Vietnam and protest and is still completely lyric for lyric, beat for beat, note for note relevant today. So I'm going to read that later. Also, on this episode 64, should I get into the theme and then come back and talk about what's happening? Because I went home. I've got an envelope. I'm holding up an envelope here, everybody. I went home and I went through boxes and I found old notes, love letters, letters from teachers, letters from employers. And I just randomly grabbed a few. I was sitting around with my parents laughing at this stuff. So I want to share some with you. And then what's wrong with Arnie Adams? You want to know what's wrong with Arnie Adams? Hold on. I mean, this is clear and present. Arnie Adams is guilty of being what's wrong in this episode. This is my new blue suit right here. I'm about to hold up. And this has now, I'm on Taylor number, not one. I had to go back to one, two, not two, three, four Taylors to get this suit right. Why? Because I'm a perfectionist and I'm driving myself crazy. I made myself sick last week. I don't know if it was a seasonal changes, but I felt sick trying to get this suit perfect. And guess what? I don't even wear suits. So this is just a ridiculous exercise. Little friend.
He's got crazy.
crazy hair. Yes, I do. Episode 64, What's Wrong with Orny Adams? Wait till you hear the suit. I admit, I'm wrong.
What's his name, Kev?
Orny. I admit it. Adams. I admit it. I'm going to play you something that I talked about in the last episode, which is now up on stage. Maybe we'll talk about that at the end. We're going to talk about the blue suit at the end. We're going to talk about... We've so much to talk about. This is exciting. This is exciting. Episode, did I say it yet? 64. But I got to talk to you about this clip. Let me drag this audio down. This clip where this woman said this. She said, I feel, that's her accent, I feel, and I've always felt like the country, I admire how simple I believe their lives to be, but they can't be. They're just as complex as my life and everybody else's, but I picture them out on the boat fishing, picture a couple of men sitting there not talking to each other with that string in the water, and they're like, figure that's how they men communicate. You know, because I'm big city orny. Heard your pa died. Then there's no emotion from the guy whose pa died. Heard your pa died. Yeah. Get the shovel. No emotion. Heard the burn down last night. Damn hose wasn't working. Just sitting on the boat doing nothing. And I figure they have these colloquialisms, these regional expressions, and one of them being this. Not that. What is that? Yeah, rock and roll. Not that. This is me pressing the wrong button once again.
I feel that if I go sit in the garage, that doesn't make me a car.
I was blown away. I fell in love with this woman, and then it turns out that's not even her expression. Okay? Here's the exact quote. Just because, this is why the internet ruins everything. I fell in love with this woman. I fell in love with her simple country self. And then it turns out she stole the line. Just because you go to church doesn't mean you're a Christian. I can go sit in the garage all day. That doesn't make me a car. That Joyce Meyer said that, one of the world's leading practical Bible teachers, a New York Times bestselling author. Joyce's books have helped millions of people find hope, restoration through Jesus Christ. Okay, then I Google further, and now the quote is basically attributed to Garrison Keillor. We know Garrison Keillor, guy from Minnesota. He's homespun, right? Going to church no more makes you a Christian than standing in a garage makes you a car. Then other people, the quote's attributed to. So who said this? Who said? I'll tell you who didn't say it. That lady on the ID channel from that show, Till Death Do Us Part. She definitely didn't say it. That much we know for sure. I was home. I got this envelope, and I can't believe I've been journaling my life. I found journals from when I was 13 years old. I found knickknacks. What I would do is take shoe boxes. In fact, here's something that has always intrigued people about me, and I don't know why, okay? When I would trick or treat, on Halloween, I would go out, I'd get all my candy, I'd come home, and I'd organize them in a shoebox alphabetically. Now, what does that mean? Snickers would be in the S's, not in the K's, where Kit Kat is. Or dots. Dots would be D's. And I organized it alphabetically so I could find whatever candy I wanted quickly. This is... very, very rational thinking for a young kid. I was organized, and I'm still that organized. How do you think I organized my routine? And my whole life, there it was. There were boxes, and it would say, like, the year. And an entire box was in a, almost like a capsule. And there would be, you know, tickets to concerts I went to. There would be keys to, I don't know, a car I drove. There would be IDs. There would be driver's licenses. There would be medical cards. There were just like everything. That when I was in Europe, there were rail passes. It was just really cool. And so I just grabbed, I'm telling you, I could sit there for hours and relive my life. And when people say, man, You know, life goes so fast. Let me tell you something. It doesn't go fast. I've lived several lifetimes. When I'm going through these boxes, I'm like, wow, who is this person? Like, I have faint memories of this person, but I'm such a different person now than I was then. And it just shows the growth, and it just shows that, what is that, like a leaf blower? Like, can you hear? I'm going to put the headphones on again so I can hear if you can hear that. That is unbelievable. What? The noise. Every day. There's no... I want to go to where that lady lives in the Bible Belt where there isn't noise like this every day. And I have time to come up with thoughts like if I lived in... If I was in the garage, I wouldn't be a car. I'm telling you. Every day in modern life, it's noises. It's notifications from your phone. It's people honking. It's noises. Leaf blowers. Didn't we make these illegal? These gas leaf blowers? I just want to tell them to shut up. I'm on a roll here. I got an email from one guy complaining about the podcast because the decibel level wasn't correct or something. And he said he couldn't even listen to it. And now I'm competing with a leaf blower. Who blows leaves on Halloween? Here I am. I'm about to really go over something that is so deeply personal. My childhood memories. Thank you. Just stopped. Now it started again. All right. Now I'm fired up. I want to read you some lyrics to a song. Okay? And again, the internet ruined this. This is a song I listen to all the time. I listen to it to get fired up for shows. I love the beat, the tone. I just love this song. I just relate to it. And I love the fact that the lyrics from 1964 still hold up now. Like, I shouldn't have told you. I should have just read the lyrics. And then you would have said, is this today? Is this today? And this is the through line for my comedy. And if you're new to this podcast... Well, let me introduce myself. My name is Orny Adams. You can always communicate with me through the podcast email, which is whatswrong@ornyadams.com. And you can find everything about this podcast on, there's a portal called teamwhatswrong.com. And, you know, the video goes up on Patreon first, and then later it's released on YouTube. That's the basic here. And it's called What's Wrong with Orny Adams, and there are no rules. Sometimes a podcast is long, sometimes it's short, sometimes there's a guest, sometimes there isn't a guest, sometimes I don't know what, but it's just sort of me blabbering. It's a companion piece for my stand-up comedy because sometimes I feel I don't reveal enough on stage. So here I will reveal more of myself, which is what's in the white envelope, okay? I'm holding up the white envelope, the magic white envelope, which I'm scared to open because I'm scared to go over my childhood again. I just did it when I was home in Boston last week. And by the way, if this works out, I'll do it again. I'm going home for Thanksgiving. I'll do it again. I'll drop this back off in the correct boxes, and I'll revisit more boxes, and we can relive my childhood. But I'm nervous to do this sort of on a live mic, we'll say. Although I could edit it. I try not to edit because I believe in owning your words. But the internet ruins everything. Because the further I dive into this song, I don't want to know about my artists. So many artists that I love have been canceled, or I can't stand when they talk about politics. Just create art. When I get up on stage, I want to remove you from all that. I want to bring you, but remove you. I want to bring you to the parts that I think are important. Now, I understand it's important to have a voice, and I understand that there are issues that you should get behind and try and help change, but, oh God, does it ruin the art? Does it ruin your songs? Does it ruin your paintings? It ruins your movies. Even if I agree with you, it ruins it. I want to take a leaf blower and shove it up your ass. I mean, I can't even... Usually leaf blowers are on Tuesday. That's what's confusing me. It's the wrong day for the leaf blower in the neighborhood. That's why I do the podcast usually on Mondays, because it's leaf blower day Tuesday. But now I'm competing with the leaf blower. What's wrong with the one? I mean, it's just like nothing can go right. I need to take this thing out of this stupid Shasta, this big yellow, the gig's up in here, and get it into a studio. Because if I have a guest in here, I have to move all these cameras, I have to move all the lighting, everything has to change, put a chair here, microphones up. It's a whole production. So here's this song. So the through line for my stand-up comedy, if you don't know me, is not to divide. I don't believe in dividing. I believe in looking out and seeing different ethnic people. I love to see different political beliefs, different ages, different everything. I just want to see Noah's Ark in front of me. In fact, I don't even care if there's goats in the show. I'm going to be honest. If animals showed up, I'd welcome them. They'd probably be better behaved than some of the people in the audience. So I want to see Noah's Ark. And what I want to do is I want to bring everyone together. And it's very simple. Rather than pointing out how we're different, I like to point out how we're the same, which is shocking to everybody. Wait a minute, we're not the same. We're all the same. And I realized this from a very young age in school when we were reading Romeo and Juliet by Shakespeare. If you believe Shakespeare wrote it, right? I mean, now this conspiracy is that there was a whole group that wrote it. And I remember reading this thinking, okay, first of all, way overwritten, a lot of words that, you know, you have to look up or figure out what it means, like fishmonger. But what I did realize was nothing's changed. Whenever that period was to where I was as a kid, humans are humans. We're never going to change. We're always going to be who we are. And that's the through line of my comedy. And maybe I shouldn't say this because it's such a simple little trick. So you hook into that and you show how we're all the same, then you can grab any audience throughout time and any audience anywhere in the world. And you can get everybody to laugh instead of people looking at you like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I don't get this. This isn't for me. So I'm fascinated by how little the world has changed in my lifetime. And in this song was written before my lifetime. So here are the lyrics. I'm going to have to shut the door in a second. Okay. I just want to see on the headphones how bad this is. And thank you for sticking. That's like a hum in the background. All right, you'll be able to hear me over. That's fine. Okay. Here are the lyrics. Because if I shut the door, then I have to readjust all the lighting. See, it's a whole operation here. Imagine, you know, if you were watching the news and all of a sudden somebody with a leaf blower just started walking around in the background. That's basically my setup here. This is how the Lord has blessed me with success. I thought, wouldn't it be nice and quaint if I did this thing in a Shasta trailer? And I'm so excited. You know what I'm probably doing? It's probably just delaying getting to the white envelope. So let me talk about this. Here are the lyrics. 1964. The Eastern world, it is exploding. The violence flaring, bullets loading. By the way, the Eastern world is a reference to Vietnam. Let me start again. The Eastern world, it is exploding. Violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me, over and over and over again, my friend, how you believe we're on the eve of destruction. I mean, the violence flaring, bullets loading, you're old enough to kill, but not for voting. This is genius. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? Hypocrisy. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. We're worried about the button being pushed right now with Putin and Russia. I mean, nothing's changed. There'll be no one to save the world. You're in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over again, my friend, how you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. This is one of my favorite lyrics all time. I'm just sitting here contemplating. The guy rhymed coagulating and contemplating. And by the way, coagulating is one of my favorite words. Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. Coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. You gotta listen to the song, it's much better. I can't twist the truth. It knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation. Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. And marches alone can't bring integration. I've been saying it forever. The marches do nothing. Nothing. Look at when Roe v. Wade was overturned. Everybody outrage. Marches. Now, nothing. It's like people are just complacent. Maybe they vote. I don't know. But somebody said these people marching should just get jobs instead of marching and then donate the money to the cause. And maybe that's a better solution. Again, I don't want to get political. I'm just saying that the marching's not working. When human respect is disintegrating, the whole crazy world is just so frustrating. And you tell me over and over again, my friend, how you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. This guy in 1964 thought we were on the eve of destruction. And people today think we're on the eve of destruction. Guess what? We're never on the eve of destruction. Humans are just balanced to be on the eve of destruction. That's all. We're always going to be in this place. Maybe there's 10 years we're not in this place. That was the 80s. And it was great. It was where greed was good and everybody was having a good time and there was money flowing. But now we're back to the eve of destruction, back to the lyrics. And think of all the hate there is in Red China. Then take a look again, China. China, aren't we? We're having issue, you know, China with no COVID, with the lockdown. I don't want to get political. I'm just saying that all these themes are taking place today. Then take a look around at Selma, Alabama. Ah, you may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. You may leave here from 1965 to now, which is basically what, 38 years? 64, 38 years? You've been in space for 38 years. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. The pounding of the drums, the pride and the disgrace. You can bury your dead, but you don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor. I do, for having the leaf blowers on Monday. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction? No, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. You see what I'm saying? You want to know where comedy comes from, where great expression and art comes from? It's from understanding this, that every single paragraph, nothing has changed since 1964. And so I've been wanting to read these lyrics for a while on the podcast. And then today I'm like, well, if I'm going to do it, I should know. First of all, did Barry Maguire, the name of the song is Eve of Destruction by Barry Maguire. Did he write the song? That's the first thing. And what year was the song written? And as it turns out, he didn't write the song. Okay. The song was written by, bum, bum, bum. Eve of Destruction was written by P.F. Sloan in 1964 and recorded by Barry Maguire. The following year, Maguire's rendition has become one of the best-known protest and anti-war songs of the 1960s. Though it avoids any direct reference to Vietnam, Eve of Destruction refers to the Eastern world exploding. In the song, they refer to it. Okay? Sloan, who wrote the lyrics, said it was a poem. He wrote Eve of Destruction as a prayer. Oh, I'm sorry, not poem. Prayer to God in the form of a poem. Yes, he did say poem. Begging for clarity and understanding about the state of the world, teetering on the edge. We're always teetering on the edge. We're teetering on the edge now. We were teetering on the edge when it was the Cuban Missile Crisis. We were teetering on the edge when I was a kid and we thought the Cold War. And we thought that there was the Soviet Union, which isn't even around anymore. There's no Soviet Union. It just collapsed one day. It just ended. Remember East Berlin, West Berlin, Berlin? We've been teetering. We're always teetering. You know when they take away the McRib sandwich? We're teetering. You think it's the end of the world? Then the McRib sandwich comes back. So you have nothing to worry about. He said, I didn't want to live in a world. This is P.F. Sloan talking about the lyrics he wrote for Eve of Destruction, written, sung by Barry McGuire. I didn't want to live in this world where hatred and hypocrisy overruled love and beauty. The music came as an afterthought. Well, you don't have to live in this world. In fact, he died November 15, 2015. Barry McGuire is still alive. And again, here we go with how the internet has ruined it for me. I was like, I wonder what he's up to. And the first thing I find is that he found Jesus. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. And I thought, geez, Barry, you know, if you sit in a car, you know,
I
that
feel
doesn't mean
that if I go sit in the garage, yeah, Barry, that doesn't make me a car.
Doesn't make you a car. Barry. So, Barry... And I've confirmed this because I went to his website, which looks like it hasn't been updated since 1996, according with the techno. It's like HTML or whatever that era is. But here is, okay. He said, okay, Jesus, 13 words. He goes on his website. He goes, let me collect my thoughts here. Now that the leaf blower stopped, now I don't, I have my full thoughts back. He goes through a whole story about his grandmother said that the truth will set you free when he was a young kid. He had no idea where that came from or the Bible. And he had all these friends and his friends were doing drugs as he's got older and having raunchy sex parties. And he was part of it and he broke all 10 commandments. But he thought this was no life and there must be more. And then he stumbled upon the Bible one day didn't read it. And then he finally read it. And he said these 13 words, he said he wanted to be Jesus. And these 13 words, let me see what it says. He said 13 words that changed my life. Because I saw this and it was the answer to my personal Eve of Destruction. That's well put. He said, okay, here are the 13 words that are in the Bible. God, I'm tired. Sorry, my Boston accent's coming through. I'm tired. He said, love God with all your heart and love your neighbor. I'm having a breakdown. I think it's over for me. I now can't even speak. I'm just all over the place. I apologize. Okay. He said 13 words that changed my life because I saw this was the answer to my own personal Eve of Destruction. He said, love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And so first thing I notice is yourself is two words. So I believe it should be the 12 words that changed his life. Because you go back and love God. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I believe that Barry, I don't know you, but 12 words changed your life. Because I am editing yourself back into one word. I should have referenced the Bible to see if it is written like that in the Bible. But all these people that believe in the Bible, if you're saying yourself, well, maybe it is two words. Because yourself, you know what? It is two words. I'm wrong. Barry, you're right. Because it's like yourself. Okay. You know what? I'm dumb. I'm just dumb. I wish I had a producer that could look at this up right now and correct me. Anyway, he found the Bible. He found the Lord. You can read the whole story. But what I thought was interesting was McGuire was born in Oklahoma City and his family moved to California when he's 2 years old. After working as a commercial fisherman, he became a pipe fitter. Then McGuire got a job singing in a bar. In 1961, he released his first single, The Tree, which was not a hit. This is what it says. And then he formed a duo with Barry Kane and they were called Barry and Barry. What a dorky name for a group. And they performed original folk songs at the Ice House. This is what I thought was fascinating. I perform at the Ice House. It's one of the oldest comedy clubs in the country. In fact, Path of Most Resistance, my first CD DVD, I recorded at the Ice House. And much like The Tree was not a hit, but I still love it. And the audio's out there and you can go listen to it on Pandora, Spotify, iTunes or Apple Music and all those places. But Barry has found Jesus and you can go listen to his songs I listen to them, and I think they're catchy. I really do. I'm not into, it's not my music, but I listened to one song. It was, where is it? I listened to one song. It's Jesus Is Coming Back to Stay. And I liked it. I thought it was catchy. Jesus Is Coming Back to Stay. Could be any time, a day. Jesus Is Coming Back, I know, because the Lord told me so. Praise the Lord. Holy Spirit told him so. Shout hallelujah. A lot of shout hallelujah. A lot of praise the Lord. And then all his songs, like all four songs, because I Googled new music. It's all, every song contains the word Jesus. We are cooking. Episode 64. Let's go through the envelope here before I have no energy left at all. I was home recently. Last weekend, I put on a suit. I felt good. And I went through my closet, and here's some stuff. Let's see if this makes you laugh as much as it made me laugh. All right. First of all, here's a picture of me. Hold this up. I'm wearing a tan suit. Now, where I got a tan suit from, I don't know, but I'm holding a diploma. I think I'm class of 83. I think I must have graduated from, that would be junior high. And I'm just pulling stuff out randomly. Oh, here's a report from my teacher, and she typed it out on an index card. I got an E+. E+. That's for excellent. This is, they didn't have A, B, C's, D's, and F's. E for excellent. I remember there was satisfactory. Maybe there was another one, but you could be E+. You could be E or E-. I was E+. And this is, I was 12 years old. Your oral presentation of the book, The Outsiders, was outstanding. You were enthusiastic and extremely interesting. The book sounded very exciting, and I know you made many people in your audience, anxious to read the book. Notice she said audience. She didn't say, yeah, this is Miss C, so it's a woman. She didn't say your classmates were excited. I made the audience. I've been a performer. The one thing I realized when I was home going through this stuff, nothing's changed. I am who I am. Yes, I've evolved in thought, and I've evolved in empathy, and I've evolved as a human, and I've gotten dumber. I've lost intelligence too, but you basically are wired a certain way. Okay, now paragraph two. Your written report restated what you had told the class last Friday. Yeah, well, what am I supposed to come up with, a whole new thesis over the weekend? Unfortunately, you had many run-on sentences and seemed to forget that yourself can be two words, and seem to forget that many rules about writing good sentences and paragraphs. I forgot many rules about writing good sentences and paragraphs. Well, guess what? I'm a performer. I'm not an author. You had many ideas that just seemed to run together. Well, listen to this podcast. Listen to this podcast. This whole thing runs together in long string on sentences. Also, you forgot capital letters at the beginning of each sentence. Well, I don't think those are necessary either. I hope these suggestions will help you in making future reports of this kind. No, Miss C, nothing's changed, but thank you. Here's a ticket stub. A ticket stub from a 1985 Boston Red Sox game. Guess how much it was? I was in section 26, row 9, seat 6. I'd like to know who was sitting around me, if you guys still exist. Look at that. How much was it? $7. I used to go to Lansdowne Street when I was a kid and buy scalp tickets day of the show. Okay, here I am. Here's a picture of me. I was a waiter. Look at me. I'm wearing a tuxedo. No, I mean like a bow tie. I'm wearing a white shirt and a bow tie. Very formal. Here's a picture of me. If you're listening to the podcast, I'll get through the visuals very fast. I was in college. I did a production, and I played a Russian soldier. And there I am, dressed up as a Russian. Eugen Lazarev was my teacher, and he was one of the top Russian actors. And it was a big thrill when he went to Emory University and taught. And so I took an acting class. And lots of run-on sentences there. Here I am. I'm going to cover this woman's face. But here I am, young Orny Adams. in college. How do I block her face? And this is one of my girlfriends. And look at us sitting in front of a fireplace, an electric fireplace, drinking Chablis, it looks like. It looks like some sort of wine with light pink. And we're just looking into each other's eyes and in love. Oh, here I am with Eugene, my acting coach. I'm the Russian soldier, and that's Eugene. And this guy, such a big deal in Russia. He's the only one who's, at the time, the only actor whose picture was up in the Kremlin. And here I am rehearsing as a Russian soldier wearing a babushka. That's those fluffy Russian hats. Here's a picture of me and Taylor Negron. My first trip to California. Poor Taylor, what a sweet soul, has passed away from cancer, but he was the first guy to pay me to write. That's me and Taylor Negron. Here I am writing at one of my homes in Boston. You can see Elvis, a picture of Elvis in the background, a poster, and you've got Botticelli's Primavera. And I must have, no, I was already, I had already gone to Italy because I can tell by the comforter. But there I am in a tank top. I'm writing. I've got an Emery mug. And a cigar, and a cigar. Here I am again, writing with a cigar in a green chair. More pictures of Taylor. Okay, I don't want to show too much because this is a, this I should just put up. This looks like it's crazy. This is like some sort of cliff note I made. I don't even know if I just copied. Where are my blue glasses? So I can, this is so small, this font. It says, frequency of energy, E equals HV. It has gamma rays, X-rays, radio waves, a lot of stuff in between, increasing value, increasing wavelength, and like CO, CU is 3D10, 4S1, ZN is 3D10, 4S2. This is all written out. It looks like something out of a spy novel. There's like colors. I must have just... Either this was something to cheat with, which I can't imagine because I'm not a cheater, or it was something for me to like reference. But why wouldn't I just pull this out of a book? If this was nowadays, you'd just, you know, print the image and put it in your pocket. Energy, joules and hertz and C equals out of gamma something. This, what a boy, knowing this did nothing in my life. Nothing. Here's Ticketmaster events, who was playing at Great Woods, which is near me. I don't know what year this is, but James Taylor was playing. 10,000 Maniacs, Whitesnake, and Squeeze. I love Squeeze. I still listen to Squeeze. This is a handout I probably got in Harvard Square. And this could have been me joining a cult. I don't have time to read it, but it was definitely cult literature. And look at this. I don't know how old I was, but some underground Bob Dylan publication. Yeah. All right, let me get to the good stuff that you don't have to be listening. But this was, I found this stuff. I was with my parents. We were laughing. It was so much fun. Basketball clinic. I got a ribbon, everybody. First place ribbon for basketball. Did you know I was a great basketball player in my day? Until seventh grade, when I wasn't tall enough, everybody outgrew me. This is Hayden Recreation Center. I used to go play there every day. I would go right after school, and we'd play foosball, and we'd have Coke, and I'd buy two bags of Doritos. But I got first place for something. I have no idea what. Let's get to some of these letters here. Jeez, I don't have that much more, but... These are letters. Some of these are like, there's another cliff note. Fusion, distillation. Can't even read it. Here's a postcard from somebody. Let me read this. And by the way, in high school, my name was Adam. This is before I changed my name. Hi, Adam. I know you're mad. That's right, I'm mad. I looked all over for the postcard you described, and before I knew it, we were out of San Francisco. So I thought, well, of course that was L.A., but I couldn't find any postcards. Guess I wanted a postcard of L.A., because I had dreams of coming to L.A. I feel so bad. You were right. I am having a blast. There isn't so much drugs and sex as you described. but there is still some. I was asked to marry someone, but of course I told them I was engaged to you. Miss you, sorry about the stupid postcard. Don't be mad. Love always. And her name is S. And I don't know what year this is, but I believe this is a friend that I was, we'd always joke, you know, about being a couple, but we were never a couple. We were never a couple. What is this? 17? Oh, this is a letter I wrote to a teacher. My Spanish teacher, appealing my grade, Mrs. Paracas, 17 years old. I wrote, I'm a little concerned about my final grade. I know I received a B minus, B, B plus, and a B during the year, and a B on the final, which only counts as 20%. I think I got a D. It says a D on the final. Then I, 20%. I feel like I deserve a C plus B minus for the year. My calculations. I put up my calculations, okay? A B minus, a B, 80, 84, 84B, 84B, and a 67D, which gives me a 79.8, which is right. You can round that up to B minus, Ms. Paracas. That's what I was saying. I was wondering if you, if you're, if you have these calculations or if I have the wrong figures. If possible, could you please contact me? And then I wrote my telephone number. Have a good summer, Adam. And I put my address too. And then she wrote back, Mrs. Paracas, Adam, I'm glad, underline, you wrote about your concerns. There must have been a mix-up somewhere. You have 80.3 for the year and you just made a B minus. Remind me again in September to be sure to change your record. Oh, I guess she did screw it up. I guess I was right to appeal it. Got to fight for what you deserve in this lifetime. You know, I didn't realize I sucked that much at Spanish. I thought I was a great student. I got mostly A's. I definitely got A's in college. But that is funny. Oh, look at this. This is unbelievable. Like, I don't even remember this. Lexington High School election statements. Okay, I ran for president of the class. Now, why I ran for president, I was a loser. I hung out with the popular kids tangentially, but I wasn't going to be elected. Why did I run for president? I'd love to know what my thought process was. And I went up against the Suffredinis, and you can't beat the Suffredinis. They were like, they were triplets, and they ruled. And look at Karen's running for senior treasurer, Greg is running for senior vice president, and Mark for president. Does this sound like nepotism? Does this sound... They were like the Bush family of our high school. They dominated. And I was friends with all of them. Still friends with them. And I thought I was going to take one of them out. Look, here's my statement. Here's my statement again. Running for class president. My main objective is to pull this class together. Look, see? Nothing's changed. And establish unity through class communication and school spirit. I hope to get more of you involved in class activities and decision-making. I am open to suggestions from seniors who have good ideas, but are reluctant to express them. I guess there was a lot of fear and express, you know, I guess we were suppressed. A key to a successful senior year is fundraising. Huh. And I have strong ideas about methods of raising money for our senior prom and class trip. I don't think we ever went on a class trip. We have come a long way since our sophomore year. Shit, damn right we have. Now, I should have just shared my letter to Mrs. Paracas, showing them how I get shit done. You want to get shit done? I know how to appeal. We've come a long way since our sophomore year. Now is the time for you to get involved and elect a candidate for president who will work for the entire class. Then we can have a prosperous and enjoyable high school experience. Thank you for your consideration and support. That is so funny, because remember when I was in college, I wrote those cover letters after I graduated from college to get my first job. And I wrote, thank you for your consideration. I misspelt it in my family. Every time we go home, like when I was home last weekend, when I go home for Thanksgiving, they'll joke. They'll go, thank you for your consideration. It's like the family joke. Wow. I got it right there. Got it right there, Mom and Dad. This is from... I was 13 years old. I was retiring as a paper boy. And the neighborhood was up and they were so concerned. Dear Adam, we are sorry to hear that you are retiring from the newspaper business. You've done a great job, and we're all sure you will do extremely well in whatever you try next. Barely. We have very much enjoyed knowing you and have appreciated not only your efficiency, but your courtesy and your smile. That's right. I was courteous. I gave a smile. I always put the papers in the door, you know, it's like the screen door, the glass door. So when they open their front door, it would fall and it would read Boston Globe. That was my attention to detail. And these people appreciate it. You are a good fellow. And we wish you the best of luck. If you ever need a testimonial, call on us. And when it comes time, if you need a recommendation for MIT or Harvard, let us know. Why didn't I take them up on that? I assume one of them went to MIT and one went to Harvard. But I have been working since I was 8 years old. I worked in the blizzard of 78 delivering papers. And I continue to work today. I love working. So that was nice. And I'm sure there's more letters like that. Okay, now let's read a letter that I wrote to a girl. Boy, my handwriting has changed. I was gonna call you. I love the word gonna. What year is this? I was gonna call you last night to see what I missed in mathematics, but I didn't. Look at me using like I didn't go to school. Like I'm so interested in what happened in mathematics. I'm using it to, you know, try and get with a woman. I didn't because I thought you would think it was for social reasons. Yeah, look, exactly what I said. Of course it was for social reasons. There I am tipping my hat to who I really am. And, oh, look, I thought you would think it was for social reasons and go tell everyone and rumors would be flying like before. Guess something else happened. Uh-oh. So she wrote back in her handwriting. There's my handwriting and her handwriting, like we're passing notes and stuff like that. Used to write a note, pass it to somebody, then they would make a note on the note and pass it back, and it'd go back and forth in the classroom until you got caught, until the teacher turned around from the chalkboard and busted you. She wrote, much better handwriting, you should have called. I mean, I would have kept it our secret, and you wanted me to, oh, well, your loss. Oh, boy, I guess so, because I'm still single. Never got married. Guess she was right. I don't know how old I am, but this woman called it. Are you still madly infatuated with, and then the woman's name begins with J. And yeah, I still am to this day. So yeah, this was probably written when I was 12 years old. I side with you. Good. Good. So I write back. Last time I heard through the grapevine that I call you every night and I told you how much I loved you. Her. Or loved someone with an M and wanted to get back with her. Bullshit A, bullshit B. I was continuously bothering you with phone calls. Of course, I'm still madly infatuated with Jay. She's my babe, best friend a guy could ask for, except you do mean that, right? Life's cool. How about you? Boy, I mean, this is embarrassing. She wrote, I'm really impressed by your authority over the heater. What was that? It's really intense. Who told you this? I swear I never said that to anyone. So now we're going back and forth. But look at this. This is before dating apps, everybody. Here's another love letter. How was your week? Yeah. These are handwritten. I'm holding it up. Look at this. How was your weekend? Are you nice of you to desert me at lunch? Jeez, I'm always like the victim in every relationship here. Right back, ahora, meaning now. And by the way, ahora, right back now, ahora. We know how well I did in Spanish, so that would be the proper time to say ahora. So what's up? I'm sorry. You can see the female writing, and this is someone with a V, Vicky. I don't know who this is, but their writing is so much. I look like an 8-year-old kid, and then their writing, they look like they're, you know, adults. So what's up? I'm sorry I had to talk about getting some liquor this weekend. My weekend, oh, I must be in high school, but I write like a 8-year-old. My weekend was busy. I worked and then went out and I'm exhausted. So what's new? So how's the ice cream business truck? That's right. I was going to buy an ice cream truck at one point, I think. And so I wrote, I'm shaming her note. I expect better and more intricately worked note. Jeez, I'm the one who looks stupid, my writing. In response to this one, A-OK, is it cool to get drunk? Shh, nothing's changed. I still scold people for that. How was your weekend? Busy? Why didn't you call me? No excuse. Nothing much is new. This report ruined my weekend. I did nothing. God. Boy, I am, if you talk to me, this is how I talk now. I'll say, you ruined my week. Your text ruined my weekend. Like, nothing's changed. She writes, I'm sorry I didn't call you. I was so busy with going to UMass and everything. That's a party school. Told you during lunch. This weekend, I was finally, barely know if I was, I don't read this hand. I thought about it Sunday, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, nothing has changed. Make a phone. She tells me, I have time this weekend. Make a phone call. I guess I wasn't aggressive enough. Nothing has changed. Look at this note. Oh, no, what? I have a theory on dating. I can't. This is ridiculous. Here's a note from Cindy. Hi, Adam. Hi. Here's your S. Here's what's pathetic. I didn't have to have reading glasses when I read these originally. I was going to give it to you tomorrow, but Hillary is giving Danny a letter, so I thought I'd give it to you now. We have to talk tomorrow. Oh, boy. My heart just stopped. You never want to hear that from a woman. We have to talk tomorrow. It's very important. Please write. Do we have phones? Please write me back. Well, sleep well and pleasant dreams. See you tomorrow morning. Love, Cindy. Sorry so short. Wow. This is, in case anyone's wondering, this is what it was like before text messages. Okay. Adam theory. Definitely proven true. This is a theory I have on love. And I read it, but look it. I'm holding it up. I read the theory, it doesn't make sense, which explains a lot about where I ended up in life. That's what I'm saying. Okay. I don't know. I think to sum up, I think it's fascinating how little we change in life. I'm still having the same problems in relationships or even friendships. I always feel shorted. I always feel like I'm initiating the phone calls. I always feel like their response isn't enough. So, you know, there I am in high school, I guess, because someone's buying drinks and one of them, you know, I thought I was, in, you know, 8 years old by looking at my handwriting and my horrible grammar and writing style. Boy, the teacher that pointed that out from my outsider's report was correct. But, you know, it doesn't work so well on the podcast, but like when I'm at home and my family and we're all just sitting around laughing at this stuff, it's really remarkable. It's really funny. And I'm really glad I saved this stuff. So, you know, I have all these boxes and my parents for years have been like, when are you going to get rid of the boxes? When are you going to? And I'm glad I didn't. Even for that 1 hour that we were laughing, we were hysterical. Oh my, I found a letter from my sister. You got to hear this. This was in one of my journals. Okay. I have two sisters, Emily and Julia. And listen to this. I took pictures of this. I didn't want to even take it out of my family house. This. First of all, my sister, this is my younger sister. She's 4 years younger than me. She spells diary, D-I-U-R-E. Now, I can't make fun of anybody having just read my notes, right? She wrote, Dear Diary. Today, I got into a fight, F-I-T-E, with Julia, but I still love her. Love, Emily. Dear Diary, I have a pretty Barbie, something about Barbie. Anyway, then she inserts, I love Julia now. Love, Emily. Now, listen to this one. Dear Diary, today I went up to Cape Cod, and I'm having fun with family. Heart. Dear Diary, today I went out for lunch and had loss of fun. Love, Emily. Loss. L-O-S-S. Okay? Now notice, she got into a fight with Julia. She forgave her. She still loves her. Then she just put an extra note saying, I love Julia. I love Julia now. Love, Emily. Ready for this one? This is my little sister, who I thought loved me dearly. who I thought I protected. I hate Adam. He is a shitball. because he is mean to me. From Emily. I'm a shitball. I'm mean. Nothing's changed. Listen to my last special with the girlfriend that called me mean. I guess I'm mean. I'm a shitball. I am a shitball. Everybody's right. If you think I'm a shitball and mean, you're right. Nothing has changed. And I'm tortured. Let me tell you about the blue suit as quickly as possible. Because I bought a blue suit. I was spontaneous. I was trying to find a shirt for underneath my suit for this event I had last weekend in Boston. And I just wanted to make sure that it creeped out from the sleeves. Because that's the new look now. Everything has to show a little white. Like if you're noticing more and more, it's like who can show more sleeve? And now people's suit sleeves are so short, it's starting to look like they're wearing short sleeve suits. It's getting absurd. It's supposed to show a quarter of an inch to half an inch. And I don't know suits well enough, but I also know every time I get something altered, one arm is shorter than the other. So I've been using this tailor forever. And the guy's great. I mean, he'll take in a quarter of an inch here, a little on the shoulder, a little on the back. Like he deconstructs the entire suit and makes it look like it was made for your body. In fact, he makes suits from scratch, so I knew he'd be good. Anyway, this time, I went in. He wasn't there. They tried to get this other lady to pin me, and I said, no, where's Mr., and I know his last name, but they don't speak any English, so they have to get the daughter on the phone to translate. She said he's at lunch. So I said, when is he coming back? I'll wait for him to pin me. So she said like a half hour, an hour, so I wait, and 5 minutes later, he just shows up, and he's still chewing, and clearly angry that he had to come back to measure me. And he barely pinned, like I get the pants tapered. I want them to look like they were made for me. But you have to pin all the way down. You have to create like a line. You're supposed to use chalk. There's no chalk. And so I left there feeling uneasy and I should have gone with my gut. And he charges me several hundred dollars. And I come back a week later after my trip from Boston. And nothing fits right. The sleeves don't look like they've been hemmed at all. The pants aren't tapered. They're about 2 inches too long. It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. So I said, and they agreed about the pants, so they redid the pants. They said, come back tomorrow, and they'll be done. I go back tomorrow. They're still not right. They're still bunching up in the back. Like, you know, it doesn't look like a well. What I love about suits is when a suit looks right, when a suit looks perfect, you just look at a gentleman, you go, he's got it together. And in most of my life, I don't got it together. Look at me on stage. I'm sloppy. Look at me in life. I have no style. Just nothing's right. But you look at in a suit, I want perfection. I don't wear them often. I spend a lot of money on my suits. I want perfection. And this was far from perfection. And I said, I don't know. It's still bunching up at the, and they're going, good, looks good, looks good. I go, I don't know. And they're like hustling me out of there. And I left feeling it's not right. And so I called a friend who owns a store and I said, do you know any, you know, places to get a suit tailor? And he said, well, we have a tailor here. So now I go to tailor two and this tailor, she's taking very precise measurements and I feel good. I said, you understand suits, right? Because it's different than dresses or anything else. And, oh, of course, and reassured me and come back tomorrow. And I go back tomorrow and it's still not done. I sit there for 2 hours. And when the pants were hemmed, they were hemmed incorrectly. Meaning the length was correct, but she stitched through the pants. So you can see the stitching. It's supposed to be like hand stitched in such a way that it doesn't break through the skin of the clothing, of the material. So you don't see any stitch on the outside of the pants. These aren't jeans. And then the cuff on the sleeve was done so sloppy. Like, I don't mean to insult her work, but like, I paid, I left there, and I go, it's now Friday. I've got a pounding headache. I've now... Tailor one, I use one time, then he tried to correct it. I go to this next person. She not only screwed it up, she created a hole in the sleeve. So now there's a hole. I'm going to show you. Here's the blue suit. It's a gorgeous Xenia suit, okay? There's a freaking hole. There's a hole. It doesn't look like it's hard to see. I'm holding it up to the camera. I don't know if you can. It looks like a snag. It looks like a snag. Can you see it? There's a snag. There's some threads coming out because it's got to be restitched. But I'm holding. I can put. You know what? I took pictures. I'll put it up. There's a snag. There's a snag in the suit. And it stands out because it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous wool. And so I bring it to the third tailor. She looks at the work and she said, "Who did this?" She goes, "I don't mean to be critical, but this is some of the worst tailoring I've ever seen." I said, she said, "Bring it back to them." I said, I feel uncomfortable. I'm not into, confrontation. She said, "Bring it back to them. Tell them to fix it. Tell them to fix it. This is inexcusable." I said, "I'll just pay you." So now I'm on tailor number three. I got to pay tailor number three to hem the, I've now paid three tailors to hem the same pants. It's not that hard to hem pants. Now, tailor two did taper, and I think tailor two got the tapering right, but I have no confidence because tailor two sucked at the hemming and sucked at the sleeve. The sleeve's all messed up. And Ann put a hole in the, how did she put a hole in the suit? Was it iron? There's a little hole. Was it from ironing? Did she snag it and try and fix it and made it worse? Now I've got to go to something called a reweaver. Fourth tailor. You want to know what's wrong with Orny Adams? This is what's wrong. Anybody else takes the suit, they probably go to one place, it's fine, it's good enough. Not me. I try and make something better, I make it worse. I'm now on tailor number four. Tailor number four, which doesn't open until tomorrow, I'm such a nervous wreck because I've got to have this little hole. By the way, I've never worn this suit. It's brand new. I've got to have it reweaved, which is this old tradition, or I don't know what it is, or craft. It's a trade where they sit there with microscopes and they match the weave of the suit. This is going to cost probably another $60 to $100 to have them weave, and it'll never be perfect. I'll never feel perfect in this suit. Never. But here's what I wanted to... This is why I brought this up. I think tailoring is done. What's wrong with tailor? It's done. Every tailor is old. They're in their 70s, 60s and 70s. It's a craft that's dying. There's no young people want a tailor. They want to be an influencer. Nobody wants to put the time. This craft, it's so specific. It's done. There's going to be no, we're going to have long unhemmed pants moving forward in life. We're done. And then this reweaving. Nope. The other thing is nobody keeps clothes. Like if you have a reweaving is for like moths eat your suit. You have it reweave. Nobody's doing this anymore. So what's going to happen? Well, we live in a disposable society where everyone throws everything out. So I predict in the future, tailoring done. Maybe technology replaces these. Maybe somebody comes up with a machine that you stand there and it measures you and it tailors, a robot. Robots need to take over tailoring is what I'm saying. Because these people are old and they don't give a shit anymore. They don't care. The first tailor doesn't care anymore. The guy used to really care. Maybe he got old. Maybe something happened in the pandemic. But he got me for a few hundred dollars. Second tailor got me for $100. Third tailor's going to get me for probably $100. I mean, the craftsmanship, there's no pride. But how can you blame them? How many years can you sit there with a stupid needle and thread things? So we need robots to... I'm begging robots to take over tailoring. That's what I'm doing. Please. 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 What's going to happen is we live in a disposable society and either robots figure out how to tailor and like we have laser printers, they laser print the suits for us, or we all have long pants. Long pants and falling down because nobody can do the waist for us. There's too many choices in life. And if you listen, I'm wrapping it up. I thank you. It's certainly an interesting podcast. My head hasn't been in the game lately. I felt like I had a cold last week. But I find I'm overwhelmed in life because of the options. And there's too many options. And I I discussed it on the last episode, episode 63, about all the different French fries. And I want to share with you before I close this podcast, before I bring it home and end it, I took what started on this podcast, because you want to understand comedy and the evolution and how thoughts happen. You know, I have a thought. I decide, do I want to do it on stage or do I want to do it in the podcast? I decided to do this one in the podcast and then bring it to the stage. And that's what happened. I did it in the podcast. I put it up on social media. I float it. I see if people respond. People seem to respond. So now I cut the clip. This is me at the Improv two nights ago, Saturday night, talking about the French fries, because something happened. A gem happened. And this is why you write down all your thoughts. This is why you try all your thoughts. Because sometimes the Lord hands you a gem. And this is me. I got to put the headsets on. This is me on stage at the Improv Saturday night. And I pull out a piece of paper. And this is on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook right now and Twitter. You can watch it. I pull out a piece of paper to read. And I knew I was going to talk about what I saw that shocked me and the new breaking news in the French fry category. But I didn't know where it was going to go. And so it's a beautiful moment. And sometimes I love to catch the first time I tell a joke on stage. And this is that instance. So here it is. This is me at the Improv Saturday night.
How many different styles of French fries do we need? There's standard, crinkle, shoestring, cottage, wedge, some skin, no skin, steak, curly waffle, sweet potato, which can go fuck itself. Tater tots, and now they have mini tater tots for the people that couldn't handle. The gigantic, oh my God. How am I gonna fit this big? Oh, it's like a full potato. Oh, look, they have mini. Oh, good, they have mini.
What's wrong with Orny Adams, episode 64.
What's his name, Kev?
We are on the eve of destruction. What do I mean? We're done with Taylors. We're done with Taylors. We're done with reweaving. And remember, if you sit in a garage, it doesn't make you a car. But I'll tell you what it does make you. A shovel. And a wheelbarrow. And a trash can. Makes you a trash can. And it makes you hedge clippers. And an old bike. It makes you an old bike. If you sit in a garage, it makes you... a wheel wagon, a rake. It makes you everything that you don't want in the house if you sit in the garage. But I'll tell you what it doesn't make you, and that's a car. It does not make you a car. Thank you, Ernesto Hurtado. Thank you, Ernesto Hurtado, for doing the audio. We'll see you next time for episode 65. My name is Orny Adams, and take care of yourself. And remember, we're always on the eve. We're always on the eve of destruction. Now, do yourselves a favor, everybody, and put your devices down and go have some of those mini tater tots, which is ridiculous because it's a mini tater tots. Always a mini tater. It's called a tater tot is. Tot is for kids, so it's already small. So what's a mini tater tot? A fetus?